actresses can get a bad rap. These women become public figures whether they wanted to be or not, and are scrutinized for everything they do, from their performances to their looks to their love lives and more. But worst of all, people tend to think actresses are stupid, or that they just sit pretty and do what they're told. While I'm sure there are plenty of directors who would love that, there have been actresses who love the art of filmmaking so much that they can't just sit in their trailer until they're invited to set. These are actresses who want to know how everything works. They ask questions about the script, the lighting, the camera lenses. They involve themselves in the production. They write their own material, produce their own work. They even direct their own films and so much more. These are the women who we're focusing on for this second season of Directora, the podcast that explores the history and contributions of women in film. The first season was all about foundations. The second season is about actresses who became power players.
What would I see in you?
Well, I'm caught between two evils. I generally like to take the one I never tried.
We are both married and we both know. You learn something once and it's yours.
And Pinky, is that for sure? And if a blow one, he's stupid thing saying really stupid.
And this is a great season. Yes, we have directors, but we also have writers, producers, studio executives, and even inventors. This season will feature some heavy hitters like Lucille Ball and Barbra Streisand, and some lesser-known actresses who made a big impact. But first, we have to start with one of the most important directors of the 20th century. I can't kick off my second season on actresses who became power players without talking about Ida Lupino. The petite British actress with the sultry voice who called everyone darling became one of the only female directors working in the 40s and 50s. She made a lot of historic firsts, including being the first woman to direct film noir, and then went on to direct some of the most legendary episodes of early television. This is why she often comes up in discussions of women directors or women in film history. So, darling, welcome to Directora. I'm your host, Stephanie Weber, and today's topic is the one and only Ida Lupino. Ida came from a long lineage of performers that goes back centuries. Literal centuries. Only in England, right? It's actually amazing because it's like she was destined to do this. Yeah, there are Nepo babies, and then there's the family business. And show business was the Lupino family business. Ida was born in England in 1918 to Stanley Lupino, a comedic actor, and Emerald Lupino, who was known as the fastest tap dancer in the world, according to the shows she performed in that billed her as such. Ida grew up with parents who were on set or on stage or on tour or on anything that involved hair and makeup. That meant that they were often gone or distracted. Ida had to accept her fate as an often neglected daughter, and she did. She seemed to understand that acting came first. Or she saw acting as the only way to get not only her parents' attention, but the attention of the whole world. Her screen debut came at only the age of 12, when she had a teeny tiny extra role in one of her dad's movies. It was called The Lovelace. And that was all it took for Ida Lupino to catch the same bug that her parents had, the show business bug. And she begged her parents to let her go into the business for real, again, at the age of 12. And they agreed, as long as she was making money. And I kind of love this deal, but it also does sound so old school British. Like, tell me your parents grew up during the British Industrial Revolution without telling me. Some kids had to work in factories, others pantomime. Her parents said that if she wasn't earning wages acting, then she'd have to go back to school. Luckily for Lupino, she never did go back to school. Her first film was called Her First Affair, and it was. It was a moment of firsts. She made such a good first impression that Paramount soon called her, wanting her to be their next Alice in Alice in Wonderland. They agreed to fly Lupino from London to Hollywood to audition for the role. She agreed, but reluctantly. Even as a tween, Ida Lupino preferred darker roles. She was all sick and twisted. She said of the offer to play Alice, "I've never been Alice's age." It was a clever way to say that she has always been wise beyond her years. But Hollywood didn't see this wise young woman as such. They saw a precocious little girl. Lupino balked at the innocent little girl roles that Hollywood offered her. According to Lupino, "My agent had told me that he was going to make me the Janet Gaynor of England. I was going to play all the sweet roles. Whereupon, at the tender age of 13, I set upon the path of playing nothing but hookers." Sorry, Ida, but I'm a little glad that Hollywood didn't cast you as a 13-year-old hooker. They did that to Brooke Shields, and she did not like it. Or rather, it is not a good idea for any little kid. So yeah, rare, smart move from Hollywood. Her career stalled, not because of her refusal to play little girl roles, but because of a tragic illness. In 1934, Ida Lupino contracted polio. She recovered well, but this experience gave her a renewed sense of spirituality. No, not the kind you're thinking. She didn't start wearing a cross or reading the Bible or anything like that. She was interested in spirits. That's spirits, literal spirits. Her entire family was into the paranormal realm. They believed in hauntings, psychics, and even their own supernatural abilities. Seriously, they thought they had psychic powers. Lupino was always a peculiar woman, in general. Later in life, she would secretly record people in her home and play the tapes for them as fodder. She told people that her house was built on a burial ground, and she delighted in scaring people who came over for dinner. She and her father believed that they could communicate with each other telepathically. Lupino's brief moment with polio made her believe that she was indeed psychic, and it cemented her fascination with the macabre. This would come in handy a lot later. But back to the scariest world of all, Hollywood. The teenage Ida was highly desired in Hollywood. She tried to look like the other Hollywood starlets at the time, blonde hair, tight clothes, but she was indeed a teenager. However, men like Howard Hughes didn't seem to recognize this fact. He pursued her hard. Hughes was so powerful, rich, and charming that Lupino was delighted by his advances. And none of the adults in the room seemed to mind. The studios, on the other hand, gave her what she called insignificant parts in superficial movies. Her words. She was cast in small roles and in B-movies, which is the term for lower-budget films from paltry studios that don't tend to be very high in quality. Lupino, however, was a true professional. She played her part, but she knew she could do more. She wanted to do more. Around this time, the 19-year-old Ida met gossip columnist Hedda Hopper. That old broad was always around, chumming it up with stars and writing all about it in the papers. Hedda advised Ida that she would be taken more seriously if she changed her appearance. Stop looking like a blonde hussy and start looking like a lady. So she did. She let her hair go dark and natural, and she dressed more mature. She transformed into a serious actress because, as we all know, brown hair means serious. Hey, it worked. It also worked in her love life. She married Lewis Hayward in 1938 at the age of 20. She was happy in love, but Lupino was frustrated that she still wasn't getting the meaty role she wanted. This finally changed in 1939 when she had her first critical role as the Cockney sex worker in The Light That Fails. The story goes that she stormed into the audition and demanded the role. Apparently, she had misapplied her lipstick, so she looked insane with lipstick smeared all over her cheek. Her assertive attitude and messy look is what got her the role. See, kids? You don't always have to be perfect. Be a success by being a mess. Lupino's performance as a woman on the verge of a breakdown was phenomenal. She went from tiny ingenue to a complex actress. This role finally woke Hollywood up to Ida Lupino's talents. Because it turns out, the girl can act. She then starred in Raoul Walsh's film They Drive by Night, which transformed her into a femme fatale.
I wonder what I see in you anyway. You're crude. You're uneducated. You've never had a pair of pants with a crease in it. Yet I couldn't say no to you.
Audiences and critics raved over Ida's transition to a 1940s vixen. Her characters became gritty, hardened, and vulnerable. And it was exactly what she wanted. But again, Ms. Lupino felt that she was not offered all of the roles she wanted. She was on the same lot as Bette Davis. So she was offered Bette Davis's scraps. If Davis didn't want the role, maybe Lupino would. And she did. But she wasn't thrilled about being the second or third choice. She was pissed, and she let the execs at Warner Brothers have it. She began complaining. A lot. Complaining sounds negative. I think she was making her voice heard, asking why she wasn't being considered for certain things, and stating her opinion on characters. Seems harmless, but this meant that she was considered the worst thing a woman in Hollywood could possibly be. Difficult. The dreaded D word. Her husband, Lewis Hayward. Hey, remember him? We haven't really talked about him at all, but there's not much to say. Anyway, he fought in World War II, and when he returned, he wanted a divorce. See, I told you there wasn't much to say. He told Lupino that he wanted a different life. And a different wife. One who wasn't an actress. They divorced in 1945, and Lupino coped with it in true tormented Hollywood style, partying. She had people over constantly, drank cocktails throughout the day, and experimented with pills. I know that this sounds like an early 2000s starlet, but this was the 40s. This led to a nervous breakdown, which required rest and treatment for Lupino to return healthily to work. I'm glad she got the help she needed because this really did seem to turn her life around. She flitted about different roles in Hollywood, finding that Hollywood still had no idea what to do with her. So she leaned hard into the difficult label. She played a bitter bitch in the film The Hard Way, which was a success for Ida. Audiences hated her character and they loved the actress who played her. We all love a baddie, don't we? Sadly, soon after this, her father died. And before her father died, he had a deathbed message for his daughter. He asked her, "When will you write and direct your own films?" She took her father's last wish very seriously. She lost her husband and her father in 1 year and fell into a deep depression. At the end of all of this, Warner Brothers demanded that she sign a new exclusivity deal with them. She had had it. She felt they didn't have her best interest in mind, so why would she be exclusive to them? In fact, no one in Hollywood had her best interests in mind. So she walked away and embarked on her independent journey. I mean, she didn't jump straight into directing after her dad's wishes. You see, when Lupino worked on the Warner Brothers lot before she walked away, she was often suspended for refusing to take certain roles. It was during those breaks that she learned the craft of directing. Before I go into her directing journey, I want you to know that Ida Lupino is widely respected as a pioneer for women filmmakers. Lupino was the second woman to be admitted to the Directors Guild after Dorothy Arzner. I know, I keep talking about Dorothy Arzner. Pretty much every episode, every season, I always talk about Dorothy Arzner, and trust me, I will do an episode on her when the time is right. And she will certainly come up again in this season. She was that good, that important, that influential. I mean, she's the first woman in the Directors Guild, so of course we have to talk about her. It just hasn't lined up yet. But it's important to know that Lupino was essentially following in Dorothy Arzner's footsteps, whether she intended to or not. The two were not stylistically similar at all. Arzner excelled at directing comedies, and Lupino did heavy themes and noir. However, they were the only female directors around. Period. With Arzner having paved the way for Lupino. And Lupino even shadowed Arzner on a set and watched her closely, as she did with other directors that she began working with. She started taking notes, gathering observations for when the time was right for her to step into the director's chair herself. And her love life soon improved. Yay, love. Lupino married actor Collier Young, an actor who was also interested in producing. Their relationship actually began as a business relationship, as they shared an interest in taking charge behind the scenes. Through this future planning, they fell in love. How cute. Yes, they were mixing business with pleasure, but it seemed to be exactly what Ida Lupino wanted. She wanted a relationship like her parents, two working artists respecting one another's craft and merging their talents whenever they were inspired to work together. She and Young met at just the right time and would put him in her movies. So a few things pushed her to directing: her father's encouragement, being upset with the Hollywood hierarchy, and a meeting with Roberto Rossellini. He was the director of Rome Open City, a film that exemplifies the Italian neorealism film movement, which came about in post-war Italy and was meant to demonstrate everyday life. And yes, he was Isabella Rossellini's father.
As one of my clients simply said, I've gone to be alone.
Anyway, Rossellini said to Lupino, and no, I will not do an Italian accent. In Hollywood movies, the star is going crazy or drinks too much or he wants to kill his wife. When are you going to make pictures about ordinary people in ordinary situations? That idea stuck with Lupino, and it is exactly the inspiration that she needed. As you can guess by her dark and twisted personality, she was interested in social issues, serious social issues. She and her husband produced her first film, Not Wanted, which dealt with the then-taboo topic of single mothers. She wrote the script and handed it to Elmer Clifton to direct. But Elmer Clifton had a heart attack. For real. I assume not from the material that she handed him. And this is how Ida Lupino ended up directing her first film. Hey, when opportunity knocks, don't grab the defibrillator. What, too soon? Good grief, it's a joke. This happened in 1949. Get over it. I'd like to formally apologize to the spirit of Elmer Clifton in case he's listening. No offense, dude, I'm just trying to make edutainment here. Please don't haunt me. Anyway, let me tell you about the film Not Wanted. It was a film about single mothers, and the censors were upset about the film's original title, Unwed Mothers, because it insinuated a point of contact between a man and a woman. Exact quote. And, yeah, that's one of the leading ways that one becomes a mother. It's so funny how old Hollywood censorship refused to acknowledge that sex is how babies were made, like, at all. You can make some sexual innuendos, but when it came to birth, no way, Jose, that's a stork's job. And how dare you suggest otherwise? Not Wanted was a surprise hit. It wasn't just Lupino's direction on a taboo subject. It was also the film's impressively low budget. The budget was $150,000, and it ended up grossing over $1 million. That big profit earned her the respect and interest of every executive in Hollywood who knew that Ida Lupino had produced it. She and Young then formed their own film company that would focus on realistic issues. They called it The Filmmakers. That's exactly what they were. And the filmmakers would go on to make a few films, but finding money was a problem, as it always is for filmmakers. Their motto was no melodramas, no westerns, no musicals. Sounds like no fun, am I right? Just kidding. Her films thrived on taboo topics like rape, single motherhood, and even queer relationships. For some context, late 40s and early 50s America was going through it. And Hollywood seemed to be ground zero. What do I mean by going through it? Well, McCarthyism was running rampant, which was the term used for the communist witch hunt that was going on across the country, but especially in Hollywood. Execs were blacklisting filmmakers for doing anything that seemed, quote, un-American. And some filmmakers and actors ratted out their colleagues as a way to get heat off of them and lick the boots of the purse holders. Elia Kazan was the most famous rat of the bunch. Ida Lupino was not on the blacklist, but the kinds of things she wanted to make films about were not really family-friendly. Thus, the only way for Lupino to make the kinds of films she wanted to make was to do so independently. This way, they could get around the censors and not worry about being un-American or talking about a point of contact. However, she and her husband did not handle balancing a business and a marriage well. As a result of Young's bad money management, when their next film flopped, it left them desperate. Ida met with her wealthy ex-boyfriend, Howard Hughes, who was titillated by the taboo films she wanted to make. Probably because they were all kind of circling sex, and Hughes liked that. Hughes liked sex. However, Ida let her husband make the final deal with Hughes, which was a fatal mistake. Her husband was terrible at business, and the deal stipulated that Hughes would have creative and financial control of their films. She divorced him. Yeah, you don't mess with someone's money. The project she made for Hughes was Outrage, a terrifying social drama about rape. I recently watched Outrage for the first time, and it blew me away. The pacing was electric. The sound is incredible. The crime scene is shot as well as any famous noir scene with top-tier use of lighting, shadow, and suspense. The relationships at the center of the film are really complex. The movie concerns rape without even being allowed to use the word. And it is so clearly about PTSD before the term was applied to abuse victims. It is wildly ahead of its time. I wish I could say that the film feels dated, but it doesn't. These things still happen. Victims are still expected to buck up and move on. And people tend to be harder on the victim than the assailant. While Outrage did very well at the box office, she struggled to get Hughes to approve most of the ideas that she wanted to do. Why? Hughes was interested in sexy stories, not the dark and realistic films that Lupino wanted to make. Where is the sex? He finally agreed to do a sports movie that he titled Hard, Fast, and Beautiful, his choice of title. It was actually just about a tennis player torn between familial expectations and her heart. Not so hard and fast unless you're talking about the ball flying across the net. Beautiful. Despite going to Hughes for money, Ida Lupino was busy seeing someone else on the side. She had an affair with an actor named Howard Duff. He was a known fuckboy, but Ida, well, she soon became pregnant by the fuckboy. So they got married and had a daughter. And Duff was not a good husband or father. He was very open about that, by the way, even telling his daughter that he always told his mother he didn't want to get married or have kids. What, you just tell your daughter that and then say, all right, have a good day at school, sweetie? Like, how does that even come up? Her final film for Hughes was The Hitchhiker. The Hitchhiker is considered the first film noir directed by a woman. It was shot on location with a tiny budget and a small cast of actors and an all-male crew that she had total control over. The suspenseful noir features two men on a fishing trip who pick up a hitchhiker. The hitchhiker turns out to be a runaway criminal who puts a gun to them and forces them to drive wherever he wants. We watched this in October for Directora's Horror Movie Challenge, and it's a classic for a reason. Not only does it hinge on the horror of picking up a hitchhiker, capitalizing on the earliest forms of the classic urban legend about picking up a stranger on a road trip, it also features some interesting subtext for 1948, a queer relationship. I am going to spoil a turning point in the film, so if you don't want to be spoiled, then please jump ahead about 2 minutes. Seriously, jump ahead and you'll be fine. Okay, is everyone still here that doesn't mind a spoiler? Good. All right, so throughout the film, the hitchhiker toys with the men and he calls them soft several times. Midway through the movie, the men are listening to the radio. There's news of the escaped criminal hitchhiker in their truck, of course, but there's also news of the two missing men. That's right, those two men are missing from their homes. And that's when it becomes clear to the hitchhiker what their relationship actually is.
Well, what do you know? That's what you told your wives you were going, huh? And you came to Mexico. What for?
Dames?
You boys ought to be ashamed of yourselves. Causing all that trouble. Telling lies.
The subtext is so clear. The men are going on a secret trip. They're lovers. Or so I thought that the subtext was clear, and I'm shocked at how little writing there is about this. So I'm putting it out there because I think it is astoundingly clear that this is what's going on, and it adds another layer to the story. This movie is basically about these men proving their masculinity. The gun symbolizes masculinity. The gun is the thing that's keeping everyone strong, that's holding this man against them, that's making them do anything this guy wants them to do. So it's really a story about wrestling with all of that. And they're not just close friends hiding from their wives for an afternoon. If they were, then they would have told their wives about the trip. They didn't tell them because they may have been planning to run away together. It also explains the men's closeness and concern for each other. Sure, any friend would be. but they hold on to each other. At the end of the film, they walk away holding one another. And look, this is Ida Lupino we're talking about. Her movies deal with taboo topics. There's no way this was accidental. I completely believe that this was intentional on her part, even if it was so subtle that audiences at the time didn't catch on. Hello, if you skipped ahead, welcome back. You did it. Yay. Now we can all move on together. After the enormous success of The Hitchhiker, she and her business partner decided to ditch Hughes and release their movies themselves. True independent filmmakers. The filmmakers made The Bigamist next. This is the only project that she directed and starred in. Otherwise, she didn't want to mix her acting career with her directing career. And it was a really big deal that she directed herself in this film. No woman had done that since the dawn of filmmaking. This film is the very first time that that happened for a feature film, that we know of anyway. This is often cited as historical fact, but I'm not certain of this. At the very least, Mary Pickford directed herself in the 1924 film Dorothy Vernon of Haddon Hall, but she's an uncredited co-director, so maybe that's why it's ignored. The same goes for Salome, in which it's pretty well known that Alla Nazimova was the film's true director, even though her husband's name was put down as the director so that she would be taken seriously. So maybe the crediting situation is why we don't consider either of those films when discussing actresses directing themselves? Regardless, The Bigamist is the first time an actress directed herself in a feature film and was fully credited as the film's sole director. Here's the peculiar thing about The Bigamist. She was making the film with her producing partner and ex-husband, Collier Young, who wrote the script. And the film was about a man with two women that he loved who makes an error in marrying and remarrying. Collier cast Ida, his ex-wife, and Joan Fontaine, his most recent wife. Ay, 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 and I thought her motto was no melodrama. The behind the scenes of this movie sounds like a soap opera plot. It does sound awkward, but the trio insisted that it wasn't. And Fontaine said that she was friends with all three of Collier Young's wives. Ah, good. A man who collects wives for his new wife to be friends with. That actually sounds kind of chill. The Bigamist was met with rave reviews. Critics considered this Lupino's best work. The film was also unusually ambiguous for the time, giving empathy to each character and being careful not to pass a moral judgment on any particular person. However, it was not a financial success. So that put Lupino in a really bad spot. Her company crumbled with her decision to distribute their film themselves. She also began drinking heavily with her new husband. The combination of these two led to filmmaker's downfall, and it meant that Lupino wouldn't direct another film for over a decade. The now 37-year-old was desperate. She went back to Warner Brothers to beg for work, but she found that they still didn't know what to do with her. After all this time, they didn't figure it out. They didn't do their homework. Come on. To make matters worse, her new husband, Howard Duff, the often out-of-work actor, was put on the blacklist. Was he a communist? I don't know. But I do know that he was an arrogant fuckboy with a drinking problem. So he probably said or did something that he shouldn't have at some point, the commie bastard. This bad financial situation forced Lupino to take work in a place that was uncommon for film actors. Television. Okay, TV was different back then. It was in its infancy, and people at the time probably judged her for this move, but she couldn't just not work. TV was seen as lower quality than film back then, but she had no shame about working in TV, and she was even nominated for an Emmy for her performance in the TV show Mr. Adams and Eve. Others may have seen this living room entertainment as beneath the art of film and theater. I even have a shirt that I got from a micro cinema in a small village in the south of France that says, "Cinema is an art, television is furniture." I know. How hoity-toity do I sound? It's cheeky, and I don't really believe that, but that was the prevailing feeling about TV for decades. And, you know, I had to buy a shirt. It was such a cute thing. It was such a cute little place I found in the middle of nowhere. I had to. Anyway, she had a lot of success on television. It welcomed her with open arms. Not only was she earning awards and praise for her acting roles, but she also became the first woman to direct TV episodes. I first became aware of Lupino from The Twilight Zone. Side note, I am a huge Twilight Zone fan. I've seen every single episode multiple times, and I credit watching it as a child with giving me a sense of story, as well as an appreciation for TV. Ida Lupino was the only person to both appear in and direct episodes. She acted in the episode called The 16mm Shrine in 1959, and then she directed The Masks in 1964. Both of these episodes are fan favorites. In The 16mm Shrine, she takes a sort of Sunset Boulevard turn as an aging actress who refuses to believe her irrelevancy due to aging. She plays it so believably that it's chilling, and you wonder, like, if Sunset Boulevard had just been made about 20 years later, would Ida Lupino have been the perfect choice to play the role?
Isn't it odd we always picture people the way they were, never as they really are? Funny.
And Lupino was the only woman to have directed an episode of The Twilight Zone. The Masks is widely regarded as one of the absolute best episodes of the series. She also directed so many other popular TV shows. Batman, Bonanza, Daniel Boone, Gilligan's Island, Charlie's Angels, and more. Her final directing credit was in 1968, but she continued acting until 74. It might seem surprising that she managed to direct so much at a time when women did not hold positions of power. I can't iterate enough the fact that Ida Lupino was the only female director doing this at the time. There weren't any others. And I like to think that Lupino cracked the code for the time she was alive. On directing, she said, "I love being called mother. I would never shout orders at anyone. I hate women who order men around, professionally or personally. I wouldn't dare do that with my old man, and I don't do it with the guys on set. I say, 'Darlings, mother has a problem. I'd love to do this. Can you do it? It sounds kooky, but I want to do it.' And they do it." I love that so much. I don't love that she, like, tears other women down, but, you know, it's the 50s. She basically played a damsel or a sweet old lady while in the director's chair, and it worked. I can't imagine, as a director now, going, "Darlings, mother has a problem," and having my crew respect me, but I might try it. Her personal life was filled with strife. Her marriage completely disintegrated at the time. Yeah, she was still married to Howard Duff. You might have forgotten that at this point, but she was. She took her rage out at her alcoholic husband by becoming an alcoholic herself. And she was supposedly a really angry drunk, and her health was seriously declining. She was surprisingly meek when it came to her marriage. She did whatever she could to please him, no matter how little he cared. And after 21 years of marriage, she couldn't do it anymore. Her health and happiness were suffering, and so the pair finally divorced. She volunteered to go into a conservatorship. She was too embarrassed to ask her family for help, so she asked a younger friend named Marianne Anderson, who helped her get her life back on track. Marianne helped Lupino get sober and leave her house to get more involved in the community. According to Anderson, she would still fight with the neighbors, but I think she was at peace with herself. She died in her home at the age of 77 on August 3rd, 1995. After hearing this episode, you can easily see why Ida Lupino is such a celebrated director, regardless of gender. Watch just one of her films and you'll really get it. Lupino really wasn't a woman who knocked other women down that often. Lupino really did champion her actresses, and she even once said, "I'd love to see more women working as directors and producers. Today, it's almost impossible to do it unless you're an actress or writer with power. I wouldn't hesitate right this minute to hire a talented woman if the subject matter were right." I want to end by talking about a specific moment in her life because it is so strange and so telling of who she was. You see, she was always praised for her professionalism. And she liked to work and work hard, but she didn't like to sit for the accolades. Perhaps that's why she had more success behind the camera than in front of the camera. She didn't need that type of worship and stardom. She cared about her work. And that's probably why she hated her episode of This Is Your Life.
At the television camera, right out there, tonight, Ida Lupino, This Is Your Life.
If you don't know, This Is Your Life was an old show that would surprise people with special guests throughout their life who tell them about how much of an impact they've made. It's sweet and incredibly saccharine. Anyway, Lupita was ambushed at the studio, believing that she was there to film an episode of Mr. Adams and Eve. Instead, tearful actors thanked her for giving them a chance. Friends joked around, and her husband, Howard Duff, told the public how much he loved her. All right. As soon as the episode ended, Lupino shot up and asked where the bathroom was. She cursed under her breath the entire way there and calmed herself down in the bathroom. She hated surprises. And she hated the performance of the whole thing, which you can clearly see. If you watch it, she looks horrified and furious and is trying very hard not to appear that way as she catches up to what's happening and gets herself together to experience the next hour of her life. Oof, that's tough. She looks intensely uncomfortable for parts of this, but she played her role. She did get herself together, smiled, played along. She was indeed a trooper. As her own daughter once said, she didn't think she was doing anything special. And that's exactly what made Ida Lupino so special. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of season 2 of Directora. This is a season of 9 episodes total. You've just heard the first. Oh my God, it's going to be a great season. So please keep listening. Tell your friends. Subscribe to Grab Bag Collab and listen to this and so many other amazing podcasts. And I want to thank Grab Bag Collab for all their work and support. Amanda Rossman, Amber Hunt, Daisy Egan, they're all so supportive and helpful. I also want to thank Brock Alter for doing the artwork and for helping me with some general tech questions. How about next week you come up and see me sometime, because we're going to talk about Mae West and the exciting story that landed her in jail. Join me then, and until next week.